So this week we're starting Sefer Shmuel. We had 2 weeks of introduction where we looked at the end of Sefer Shoftim. Now we're jumping into Sefer Shmuel, although we're kind of continuing our introduction because the idea has been we're trying to get a sense of what the spiritual situation of Klal Yisrael was like at the beginning of the book. What do Chana and Shmuel have to deal with when they're trying to turn the ship around? And what we've seen from the last 2 weeks is that there's a lot of work to do, right? Klal Yisrael, by the end of Sefer Shoftim, are in a state of total disaster. We explored the story of Pesal Micha, Sefer Shoftim, Prakim Yud Zayin and Yud Ches, and we saw that the general theme there was that Bnei Yisrael, having entered the land where Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, takes us through the desert, we end up completely abandoning the legacy of Moshe Rabbeinu, the story of that wandering Levi who winds up in an Avodah Zarah temple, and it turns out he's Moshe's grandson, and people are just in it for the money, and instead of following the halakha, their religion is whatever they would like it to be, and that's really the essence of what Avodah Zarah is, right? We make fun of Avodah Zarah because we just think of it as bowing down to a statue. The truth is that ultimately Avodah Zarah is worshiping Ma'aseh Yadenu, worshiping our handiwork. And that is what was on full display in the story of the Pesal Micha. People just, religion was whatever they wanted it to be, whatever was most expedient for them, right? Where Micha and his mother keep on declaring that Hashem is so happy with what's going on over here, right? Not all true, but it's what they wanted. It's what they wanted. That's Avodah Zarah, right? Declaring God's will to just simply be their will. So that was Pesal Micha. We've lost the legacy of Moshe. And then we went last week to the story of Pilegesh Begiva, the last three chapters of Sefer Shoftim. And there things went from bad to much, much worse. Because now instead of just having lost the legacy of Moshe, we've even lost the core legacy of the Avos, right? The themes of Chesed and Mishpat and basic ethics that began with Abraham, those already go out the window at the end of Sefer Shoftim. So we could have a situation with the Pilegesh Begiva where Bnei Yisrael are behaving just like Sodom. The Navi was drawing parallels to the because this is really the opposite behavior of Avraham Avinu. And the one piece, the one surviving piece from the world of Bereishis that we saw at the end of Shoftim was the behavior of Shimon and Levi at Shechem, right? The violence and the rage and the false morality. So that was where we ended Sefer Shoftim. We've lost Moshe's legacy, we've lost the legacy of the Avos, the Bris Moshe and Bris Avot. So now, what are we left with, right? Is there any piece of hope, right, anything to hold on to that maybe as we begin Sefer Shmuel, Chana and Shmuel have a chance, right? So there's one question still left to ask, which is, okay, the people are a disaster, and it seems like the leadership is a disaster. We've looked at Shevet Yehuda. We've looked at Shevet Ephraim, the political leadership. We've looked at Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi has been terrible, right? The Levi priest, who was Moshe's grandson. The story of Pilegesh Begiva, where the protagonist was a Levi. The only hope that maybe remains is maybe things are not so bad in the Mishkan itself. Maybe the rest of Eretz Yisrael, things are terrible, but maybe if you go to the Mishkan, maybe there's some, you know, surviving, beating heart of what Torah stands for that maybe is not being disseminated to the rest of the land, but maybe there's still something that we could find in the Mishkan. That's like our last hope as we turn the page from Sefer Shoftim to Sefer Shmuel. So what we're going to do this week, instead of beginning from Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, is we're going to begin with Perek Beis, because I think in order to understand what Chana is doing, we'll be better off if we understand what the Mishkan is like that she is going to, what are the Kohanim like? Eli, the Kohen Gadol, his sons, who are the Kohanim. What is this world that she has to deal with? Is there any hope from the Mishkan itself? Now, if we paid attention carefully, there was one warning sign we had in Shoftim that things are not going to be good here either. Because if you recall, at the very end of the story of the statue of Micha, the Navi told us that the Pesel Micha was around as long as there was a Mishkan in Shiloh. Sounds like the Navi was connecting these two. The Avodah Zarah temple of Micha that's up in the north is being associated with the Mishkan, which is in Shiloh, down in the land of Ephraim, for hundreds of years. That's a warning sign, right? Like if things are going well in Shiloh, then you'd think that that message should have stopped what's happening in Pesel Micha. Why is the Navi drawing connections between the two? So we might be, you know, nervous, but as we dive into Parak Beis, we'll see how bad things are going to be. So we're going to divide the shiur up into four parts. We might not get through all of it this afternoon, and that's totally fine. First, we're going to look at what the job of a Kohen is supposed to be. In order to do that, we have to look at some psukim at the end of Parshas Korach. And then once we have the model of what a Kohen's job is supposed to be, what the kahuna is supposed to look like, we then can look at the conduct of the sons of Eli, who's the high priest at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, and see if they are living up to expectations or not. Okay, so let's load up the share screen, make that a little bit smaller, and here we go. So this is Perek Yud Ches in Sefer Bamidbar. And the timing is important. It's the aftermath of the Korach rebellion, right? Where Korach challenges Moshe, but he also really challenges Aaron, right? Korach, who's a Levi, wants to claim the priesthood for himself. And there's an extended back and forth about this. It ends up with Korach and his supporters being killed, and there's a plague. And there's a miracle with staves. So at the end of that whole debacle, frankly, so we have a perek where Hashem turns to Aaron and he says, okay, we've now established that you and your descendants are universally recognized as the Kohanim, but let's look at what that means. What is the responsibility for a Kohen? And the basic gist you get, even if you just look at the words that I colored in the text over here. So there are a few words which are repeated over and over and over again. And those are the themes of shmirah, right? Guarding, and avodah, service. The job of the Kohen is to guard the Mishkan, protect its kedusha, make sure that, you know, people who are not supposed to be there are not coming in there, make sure that things are being treated with the appropriate reverence. The other job they have is avodah, to actually perform the service in the Mishkan itself. That's their job, shmirah and avodah, protecting the Mishkan and actually doing the service in there. One surprising note, which we'll circle back to in 1 minute. So the whole parak opens up, Hashem turns to Aaron. Surprising, because Hashem almost never speaks to Aaron. Hashem always speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The pasuk says, your children, your family, you are going to bear the sin of the Mikdash. Unclear what that means, and that's kind of a down way to begin the parak, right? You're gonna bear the sins of the Mikdash. You're gonna bear the sins of the priesthood. We'll see what Chazal do with that in a minute. But what's very clear off the bat is that being a Kohen is a responsibility. First thing you have to know is you are bearing the sin of the Mikdash, you're bearing the sin of the Kohuna. There's responsibility here. And then Aaron is told, your job is Shmirah and Avodah. You have to guard the Mishkan and you have to serve in the Mishkan. This is not, you know, just a free privilege. There is a lot of work and responsibility that you have to do. Just parenthetically, by the way, these themes of Avodah and Shmirah, that is exactly what Hashem told Adam HaRishon to do a couple of weeks ago in Parshas Bereishis, when he first puts him into Gan Eden. His job is L'avda u'shamra. So this is, you know, one of those points which shows how the Mishkan really is supposed to be restoring Gan Eden in the land, right? The idea is you have a place on planet Earth where Hashem's presence can reside. And that's the job of the Kohen. Job is going, keep Hashem's presence among the people. You do that by guarding the Mishkan, guarding its sanctity, and doing the Avodah. And then you scroll down, you get to Pasuk Ches, and afterwards. So Hashem tells Aaron, when you are doing the job, so as a consequence, you are going to get a bunch of food, right? There's a whole bunch of food, which is only given to the Kohen, beginning with pieces from the Karbanos, and then including Truma and Bechor and all sorts of other things, right? There's the Kohen has a lot more meat in his diet than the average person does. But that is clearly coming not as a freebie. That is essentially the payment for his office. You work as a Kohen, you preserve the Mishkan. As a consequence, you are given this this food to eat. And the food itself, of course, has kedusha and has to be eaten in a certain way. So for example, in Pasuk Tes, Hashem tells Aaron, you're going to get to eat karbanos. You're going to eat the holiest of the holy. Min ha'esh, from the fire. What does it mean you're going to eat from the fire? Rashi explains it means that after the completion of the offering of a karban, and after the parts which are given to the Mizbeach are burnt on the Mizbeach, it is only after that, it is after it goes on the fire, that the Kohen gets his share. So first thing Hashem tells Aaron, when he's talking about you getting to eat meat from karbanos, is you have to wait until it's min ha'esh. First Hashem gets his cut, and then some is going to come to the Kohen. Hashem continues, and he says, this is going to be Bakodesh HaKadashim Tocholenu. You're going to eat this in the most holy of holies. So what does that mean? Ramban says, it refers to how what the Kohen is supposed to be like when he's eating this. He has to be in a state of Kodesh Kadashim. This is not chula. This is not a regular barbecue on a Tuesday. You have the privilege and the responsibility of eating karbanos. This is sacred food. And if we think about it, the parallel really makes a lot of sense. The job of the Kohen is to bring the Shechina down among the people, right? And the food he gets to eat, the terrestrial food he gets to eat, is the food of Kachim. So the Kohen's physical life is being sanctified. And in parallel, he's supposed to be bringing Hashem's Shechina down among the people, right? Those two are working together. But the core idea is it's a responsibility. It's a heavy responsibility. Then at the very end of that part of the Perek, so Hashem has an interesting term he uses to Aaron. It's kind of the theme for the shiur this afternoon. He says, after going through all the various pieces of food that the Kohen gets, he said, all the kachim which Bnei Yisrael give to God. Right, it's given to the Kohanim, l'chak olam, an eternal portion. Bris melach olam hi. It is an everlasting covenant of salt. So it's a covenant, right? There's a bris between Hashem and the Kohen. So just like we talked 2 weeks ago about the bris Moshe, right, the covenant of Sinai, and the bris Avos, the covenant of with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there's a third bris here, and that is a specific covenant between Hashem and Aaron the Kohen, right, the Kohanim and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But what does it mean that it's a bris of salt, right? So Rashi explains, and Rashi says, well, it's compared to salt for two reasons. Number one, he says, I didn't put this on the sheet, but he says, it's compared to salt because salt lasts forever, right? There's salt is eternal. But maybe more importantly, take a look at source number two over here. Hashem says, Karas bris im Aaron, bidavar habari, salt is something that is healthy, umiskayim, and it's lasting, umavri es achirim. Salt is something which improves others, right? You want to keep your meat fresh, you salt it. So the bris melach, it's a covenant of salt, A, because the Aaron and his children are elected kohanim for all time. But also essential to the bris is the idea that the Kohen is supposed to be influencing the rest of Klal Yisrael. Just like the salt keeps the meat fresh, so too the Kohen's job is to keep Bnei Yisrael in this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the Shekhinah is able to reside among the people. That's the deal. That's the job. That's the bris. You keep Hashem together with the people. As a consequence, you get to eat the kachim. And in source three, the Sifri, right, which is the Medr Shalacha, right? This is where Chazal have their various drashos on the parts of Sefer Bamidbar. So they go back to that puzzling line at the beginning of the Perek, where Hashem told Aaron, "You are going to bear the sin of the Mikdash," and they ask, "What does that mean?" So Sifri quotes a couple of views. Rabbi Yoshia, the first one, says that it refers to a Kohen who is doing the avoda. He has a karban, he shechts it, he gets the blood, and then he forgets whose karban it is. So he just mindlessly throws the blood on the Mizbeach without having a connection to the person who's actually bringing the karban. Right? We could imagine Kohanim, they're very busy all day. Many Jews are bringing their karbanos. So you could lose track, is this Ruvain's, is this Shimon's, etc. So Rabbi Yoshia says, Tarek off the bat is saying that's unacceptable. Why? Because the Kohen has to be able to connect Am Yisrael to the Mishkan. And if you're just doing this, you know, like a Ford factory, and it's, you know, just one carbon and another carbon, and you are not appreciating the individual who's bringing his carbon, that is a fundamental failure. Rav Hirsch actually has a long comment on this, because he points out that if you look at the very first Mishnah in Masechet Zvachim, there is no halachic problem with bringing a carbon and not really knowing who it's for. Carbon is still kosher. So what's fascinating then is that even though technically what you're doing is what the Kohen is doing is acceptable, what the Chumash is saying is that the Kohen was that Hashem demands much more from the Kohen than just the technical bare minimum, right? A 65 is a passing grade, but if the Kohen is not getting an A, then that's considered Avon HaMikdash. That's considered a sin. You need to know who's coming and you need to be getting them involved. That's the first view of Rabbi Yoshia in the Sifri. And then Rabbi Yonasan, second view in the Sifri, says, I'll tell you another example of Avon HaMikdash, of the sin of the Mikdash. And that is if the Kohen is taking his meat before he does the rest of the Avodah, before he sprinkles the blood on the Mizbeach, before he burns the parts on the Mizbeach which go to Hashem, he takes his cut first. That is the Avon HaMikdash. That is the sin, explains Rabbi Yonasan. Because what's going on here? Here the Kohen is treating the Mishkan as his personal fiefdom, right? It's just, you know, the meat is my lunch opportunity. And he fails to appreciate that it's a privilege and it's a consequence of doing the work of Hashem. So first you have to bring the carbon on the Mizbeach, and then you can get your share. And then concludes Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yonasan says, "V'chein matzinu shlo nechtam gzardinan shal b'nei eli ela al shenagu b'zayim b'kachim." He says, actually this, as we segue to the Sefer Shmuel, this was the exact failure of the sons of Eli. The sons of Eli, as we're going to see, are taking the meat from the karbanos before they put the rest of it on the Mizbeach. And that sounds bad, but like not so terrible, especially if you compare it to what we saw the last couple of weeks, where Bnei Yisrael were doing Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and murder. They were doing the big three. This doesn't sound so bad, just eating your lunch a little bit early. But Rabbi Yonasan is explaining that this is actually like a fundamental failure to understand the role of the Kohen, because he's looking at the privilege he gets of eating kachim as something totally independent of his responsibility to Hashem. And for the Kohen, it's the responsibility, which really is the name of the game. Okay. So that's, right, welcome to the world of the Kohen. That's the Bris Kehuna. That's the Bris of Salt, the covenant, the deal that the Kohen has. On the one hand, the responsibilities of Avodah and Shmirah. He has to guard the Mikdash. He has to work in the Mikdash. He has to make sure everyone appreciates the Kedusha of the Mikdash. And as a consequence, he gets to eat the Karbanos, which no one else can. And that makes so much sense, because if he's bringing, you know, the Shechina among Klal Yisrael, so he gets to eat his own Karbanos. Right? Basically, you make a place for Hashem in Olam Hazeh, you almost get, you know, you get to eat Kachu. So, with that as the background, let us turn to Sefer Shmuel. So we're starting Parak Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And after we finish this, we'll go back to the beginning, right? So just what's happened until now, right, is we've, Parak Aleph of Shmuel deals with Chana, Chana's prayer. Chana gives birth to Shmuel. That's Parak Aleph. The beginning of Parak Beis, Chana sings her song. We'll have to spend some time analyzing Chana's song. And so when we jump in here, now Chana has given birth to Shmuel. Chana goes home. Shmuel is in the Mishkan. And now we see, what is this Mishkan like? What is the world of the Mishkan like that Chana and Shmuel are dealing with? What is the spiritual situation they're going to try to turn around? Okay. So let's read the Psukim inside, and then we'll comment on them afterwards. So the Nebi says, Ba'ilach Elkanah haramasa al beiso. So Elkanah, who's Chana's husband, so they go home. V'hana'ar, the lad, hayem mishareis as Hashem. The lad was serving God. The lad that is Shmuel over here. Espnei Eli a Kohen, and he did so in front of Eli. Let's remember, Shmuel himself is not a Kohen. Shmuel is a Levi, so he's doing the work of a Levi. And actually, it's exactly what Hashem tells Aaron. Hashem tells Aaron that the Levim are going to be Mishareis for you. So Shmuel is doing exactly his job, as Hashem had told Aaron the Levi is supposed to do. Then we get to Pasuk Yud Beis, Ubnei Eli Bnei Blial. Right? So the Navi does not waste any time in telling us that the sons of Eli, here they translate as, were base men. Velo Yadu Es Hashem. They do not know God. And for a Kohen, that's a disaster, because if the whole job of a Kohen is to connect Hashem with the people, so if the Kohenim do not know anything about Hashem, then how do they have any chance of being successful? None. Okay, Nabi continues. Mishpat HaKohanim Es HaAm. Here was the law of the Kohanim. There is cynicism here, because let's see what this law was that they had. Kol Ish Zoveach Zebach. Anybody who slaughters an offering. Uba Na'ar HaKohen. The lad of the Kohen, or the Kohen's assistant, would come. Kibashel HaBasar, when they were cooking the meat. The Hamazleg Shalosh HaShinayim Biado. He would take a giant fork with three teeth. Vihika bakior ova dud ova kalachas ova parur, and he would strike the pot or the kettle or the cauldron. What's the last one they translate? Or the bigger pot. Okay, fine. He'd walk up to where the meat was being cooked. He'd slam his fork in there. Kol asher yalehem azleg, whatever the fork took, yikach hakohen bo. He would take. Kachayasu lechol Yisrael habaim sham shilo. So the Chafti and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, are stealing additional meat from the Kohanim. And we might note that the Navi is drawing a contrast between the Na'ar, Shmuel, right, who's the good guy in this whole story, and here we have the Na'ar HaKohen, right, the lads for the Kohanim who are involved in total theft. So that's the first sin we're seeing, right, is they're stealing meat that doesn't belong to them. This is the part of the Karban which goes to the bringer of the Karban. You bring a carbon shlamim, some of it goes on the Mizbeach, some of it goes to the Kohen, and then a bunch you keep for yourself. So from the stuff that you're supposed to keep for yourself, the Navi says, the sons of Eli are stealing. Okay. Then, Pasuk Tezvav, we're told things get worse. Gam b'terem yaktirun es achilev, before they would burn the fats on the Mizbeach, uba na'ar hakohen yamar l'isha zaveach. Already, like, you know, the minute things started, the lad of the Kohen would go to the person who brought the carbon. And what would he say? You can imagine, let's get the tone here. Tina basar, give meat. Slos lakohen, for the Kohen to roast. The lo yikach mimcha basar mibushal ki imchai. The Kohen does not want cooked meat from you. He wants the meat raw. It's like total thuggish behavior. The Kohen wants, you know, give him the meat, and, you know, binyan tzivui, like a command, give the meat. And he's not going to wait for you to cook it. Give it to him right now, raw, before they've even burnt the parts on the Mizbeach, which are supposed to go to Hashem. So Navi says, the people, you know, regular Jews who are bringing karbanos are put off by this. The Yomrei Lav Ha'ish, the person who's bringing the karban, said, Kateriak Diyun Kayam HaChilev, Bert, you know, what are you doing trying to get the meat? You still have a job to do. Go back to the Mizbeach and burn the fats, right? And then Bekach Lecha Kasher Ta'aveh Nafshecha, and then take for yourself as your heart desires. See that line, you see like the disgust that the person who's facing the Kohen says, Kasher Ta'aveh Nafshecha, that, you know, take the meat as your heart desires. The Kohen is not supposed to be someone who's a Ta'aveh Nafshecha. He's not supposed to be one consumed with desire. The people who are bringing Karbanos understand that the Kohanim that they have are totally, off in their priorities, right? So they're obviously failing in their job at influencing the people. The people are kind of horrified by the behavior of the Kohanim. And what's the response? Amar lo, ata titein, give the meat now. Velo lakachti v'chazka, if you don't give it to me, I'm going to take it by force. And I have a giant fork, so, you know, don't mess around. It's like just disgusting, thuggish behavior. Navi continues, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vatehi chatas ha-ni'arim gidola me'od. The sin of the lads was very great, es p'nei Hashem, before God, ki ni'atsu ha-anashim es minchas Hashem, because the men were despising the offering of Hashem. That's a strange pasuk, right? Because in one minute we're calling them ni'arim, we're calling the Kohanim lads, and the next minute we're calling them anashim, right? We're calling them men. So what exactly is going on here? So first of all, the Navi is once again contrasting the sons of Eli with Shmuel. Shmuel was the na'ar we had at the beginning of the passage, right? Now the ni'arim are these two Kohanim, right? Except Shmuel is a na'ar because he's a kid. These guys are grown men, right? These guys are anashim, but their behavior is the behavior of ne'arim, right? In terms of age, in terms of position, they're anashim, but in terms of their behavior, they are totally crass ne'arim. Okay, and then the Navi wraps up this little piece, and it says, you know, while these Kohanim are a disaster, so Shmuel once again is a good guy. Ushmuel mishares es p'nei Hashem na'ar chagur efod bas. Right, Shmuel is serving Hashem. He's a na'ar, but he's a na'ar in the good sense, right? He's like, you know, the young up and coming guy, and he's wearing a linen ephod, which is interesting. Okay, so that's the first piece. Welcome to the world of the sons of Eli, who are base men. They're thugs. They're stealing meat. They're eating meat before it's even their turn, before they're bringing stuff on the Mizbeach. The Jews who are bringing karbanos are horrified, but they don't care. And the Navi is calling them ne'arim as well as anashim, totally immature. So to flesh some of this out, I highlighted a couple of pieces from some of the Mefarshim, which I think are important, really getting more of a perspective as to how off and how bad and what a failure their behavior is, and particularly what a rejection of the bris melach, of that covenant of Hashem and Aaron, how what they're doing is totally opposed to that. So the first point is the term the Navi used when it called the sons of Eli b'nei Belial, right? Translated as base men. So there's a really important Rashi. The first time that this term Belial is used in Tanakh is in Parshas Re'eh, Sefer Dvarim, the Ir HaNidachas, the city, right, which is majority idolaters. So that the pasuk uses the term b'nei b'li'al for the people who are turning the people to avodah zarah. So Rashi says, what does it mean b'li'al? It's a compound word, says Rashi. It means b'li'ol, without yoke. Shapartu olo shalmakom. B'li'al, it means b'li'ol. It's just a compound word. It means no yoke. They've thrown off the yoke. That is the perfect description, right, of the sons of Eli. Because how are they perceiving the kahuna? What's their perspective on the priesthood? No responsibility. There's no ol. It is purely privilege, right? They just look at it as a birthright. I was born a Kohen, therefore I have a right to the meat that is being brought to the Mishkan. The core deal that Hashem had with Aaron, you do the work of Avodah and Shmirah, and as a consequence, you get to eat the karbanos. They've totally abandoned the responsibility side of things. They are Belial. And if you think about it, the Navi might be doing a little bit of a word play here, a little bit of word music, because B'nai Eli and B'nai Belial sound very similar, right? It's like you have the words of Eli are even right here, right? You know, you've Aleph Lamed Yud. You have that right in the term. You think of B'nai Eli, B'li'al is the word you're supposed to think about. They had no yoke. No yoke, they abandoned responsibility. This is going to be a really important theme generally in Sefer Shmuel, the idea of the people who are B'li'al. So let's definitely keep it in mind. And this just really puts such a nice capturing of what they're all about. So another piece here, the one of the Mefarshim calls out that's really important for fleshing things out is an insight the Malbim has. If we scroll back for a minute, there was a pasuk that was kind of strange, because the Navi described how when the lad of the Kohen would show up to the sons of Eli, he has that fork, right, and he stabs his fork into the pot. For some reason, the Navi went through like the Bed Bath and Beyond catalog, all the different pots which people might be bringing to the Mishkan. You have your kior and your dud and your kalachas and your parur. So why on earth do we need to spend so much time describing the details of every single one of these pots or pans or kettles or cauldrons or whatever? So the Malbim takes this up and he has a fundamental insight, which is, you know, if someone's bringing a karban, so you could bring different animals. You could bring a one-year-old sheep, right, which is small. You could bring a huge bull, right? What utensil are going to use? If you're bringing a small animal, you're going to use a smaller pot. And if you're bringing a huge bull, you're going to use a big cauldron. Malbim points out the four utensils that the Navi describes are going up. They're bigger and bigger and bigger utensils. So it says, what's the point? It is not only that the sons of Eli are stealing meat that doesn't belong to them, because they're not supposed to get any of the meat that's in the pot or the cauldron or whatever. But writes the Malbim, says they use a one size fits all. If you walk up, you have your one huge, your one big fork, right? So if the family is using a huge cauldron because their carbon was a big bowl. Okay, so he stabs in his fork. He takes a big piece of meat. That's unfortunate. But, there's still 90% of the animal left. But if your carbon was a little sheep, and you're not using one of the kalachas, you're not using one of the bigger utensils, you're just bringing, you know, you have a little small pan. So now that fork is taking half the meat from the karban. It's regressive taxation, right? What are the kohanim doing? Not only are they stealing, but it's the people who are the poorest who are suffering the most. If you bring if you're rich and you're bringing a huge animal, so okay, it's annoying that the kohanim are taking a little bit that doesn't belong to them. But if you're someone who's not super wealthy, you know, you saved up for a couple of years to be able to bring the small animal as a karban, and now the sons of Eli are showing up with their fork and they're taking half your animal, right? So Malvim says that's what the Navi was showing when describing the fact that they're using one fork regardless of the size of the animal. So not only are they stealing, which is antithetical to the role of a Kohen, imagine what Aaron would say if he knew about this, but they're stealing more from the poor than they're stealing from the rich, right? They're harassing the most poor, vulnerable people who are coming to the Mishkan, right? You can imagine like what a religiously inspiring moment it's supposed to be. We saved enough money to bring a karban, to bring a shlamim, and then the Kohen's, you know, lackey shows up and he just grabs half of it from you so that they could, you know, stuff their faces a little more. Like just total destruction. How is anybody gonna draw any spiritual inspiration from going to this Mishkan of the sons of Bailey? They're looking at the kahuna exclusively as a privilege, and the people who are coming are totally horrified. Okay, so continuing. One more piece. This is just a bit of a callback to a couple of weeks ago. We talked about how the Navi is describing the sons of Eli. Remember, it describes the sons of Eli as Ne'arim and Anashim in the same pasuk, right? And we're like, wait, are they lads or are they men? They're proposing, oh, they have the maturity of teenagers, even though these are, you know, the official grown, respected Kohanim. So we had that exact theme back in the story of Pasal Micha, when we were introduced to that wandering Levi who ends up becoming the Kohen in Micha's temple. So first we were told that he was a Na'ar, a lad, and the very next Pasuk we were told he's an Ish, he's a man, right? What's going on? You have the same story in both cases, the Levi of Micha and the sons of Eli. In terms of their position, they're Anashim, right? This guy in Micha, he's the grandson of Moshe, he's well known, he has Yichus, he's a respected member of society. The sons of Eli, these are the Kohanim. These are, you know, they're the important people. They're the Anashim. But in both cases, the spiritual leadership of the nation have the maturity and the religious, you know, dedication of Ne'arim, right? Where it counts, they're teenagers. As opposed to Shmuel, right, who will, you know, focus more on as things get better, who's the opposite. Shmuel, in terms of age, is a Na'ar. Right, in terms of Yichus, no one really knows Shmuel. His parents aren't around, right? But in terms of his behavior, so he is very, very much going to be an Ish. Okay, so a few minutes left. We're not going to finish this this afternoon. So we'll wrap up the rest of it next week. But let's look at what Eli's response is. This throw a monkey wrench. So if Eli is the Kohen Gadol. Right, so the Navi has been describing his sons, who are a total train wreck. So you might wonder, right? Well, you know, where's Dad? Like, where's his response? So the Navi says, "Don't worry, Eli is going to respond. The fact that his children are running the Mishkan like they're members of the mafia, so Eli is going to have something to say. Let's see. The Eli zaken ma'od, very old. Vishama is kol asher yasun banav l'chol Yisrael." He heard everything that they did. You see, I colored it red. The word, the Shara Shin Mem Ayin, shows up like five times in these few psukim. Eli does a lot of hearing. The question we'll ask is he going to do any doing, right? Is he going to actually take any steps to improve the situation? Okay, so here's everything that his sons were doing. The Eis Asher Yishkevun Es Hanashim Hatzov Os Pesach Ohal Moed. And that they were lying with the women who were assembling at the entrance to the Ohel Moed. So that's I'm a little too young for this, but they tell me this is like a record scratch moment, right? Like, what? No one has mentioned anything about inappropriate sexual behavior. All we've spoken about is the Navi describing the sons of Eli stealing meat and acting like thugs. So this does not seem to belong. So we're going to figure out what on earth, why is this here? What does it mean? If this is happening, this seems a lot worse, right? If they're sleeping with women who presumably are likely married women, That's adultery. So that's not just taking some meat that doesn't belong to you. Right now we're back in last week. We're back in the world of the big three. We're back in, you know, Gilead Arayos. Why wasn't that discussed at all? So this is a total curveball. We need to understand what's going on. Okay. So okay, Eli hears apparently his children were even worse than we thought. And so Eli says, Yamar lahem, lama tasum kidvarim ha'ela asher nochi shomea es divrechem haraim. Why are you doing these things that I hear these bad rumors? Me'es kol ha'am ha'ela. I'm hearing rumors that you guys are not doing well. Al banai, no, my sons, ki lo tova hashmua asher nochi shomea. The rumors I'm hearing are not good. I mean, not good. You know, the rumors are that you're stealing from people, you're abusing the poor, you're sleeping with around women in the Mishkan. That's low tov, not good. Not like, that's not the response that we would be expecting. No, he's hearing, saying it's not good. There's no, you know, grabbing them by the scruff of their neck and slapping them in the face and saying, what on earth are you doing? Right? And Eli has one more, Eli has one more pasuk, and Eli says, you know, if a man sins to another man, so okay, this really means the judge can judge him. You know, you have a court case, you have two people that get in a room, the lawyers talk, right? We'll have a settlement, I'll pay you some extra money, you work the judge, you try to come up with a favorable, you know, sentence. In the world of human crime, there's always room for leniency. But if a person sins to God, who's going to interfere on his behalf? So that's kind of weird because it sounds like Eli is saying that sins to Hashem, you have less of a chance of being saved than sins to man, which is not normally what we think, right? Normally we think that Hashem is more merciful than people are. So we'll have to think about that. Why is Eli's perspective on Hashem so different from what we're used to? But anyway, that's Eli's Musar, right? His sons are a complete disaster. And his response is, yeah, I'm hearing bad things. It's not good. You shouldn't do it. You know, Hashem's not going to be happy. And the Navi says, v'lo yishma'u l'kol avihem. And they did not listen to the voice of their father. You know, again, the cynical irony or the sarcasm of the Navi, right? Eli does all his hearing, right? I hear doing bad things. Lo yishma'u, they didn't listen. L'kol avihem. Navi take another dig. And then Navi has a controversial line, ki chafetz Hashem lahamisam. Right? Hashem had already decided that he was going to kill them. Rashi comments, Eli had waited so long to finally get out of his chair and tell them this, you know, mediocre piece of Musar. By this point, things had been going on for so far that Hashem was not giving them a chance at redemption. And then the Navi concludes this, you know, really sad piece of the story by once again contrasting the sons of Eli with Shmuel. Banar Shmuel halech b'gadel b'tov, gam im Hashem, gam im anashim. Shmuel is doing the job of the Kohen, right? Hashem knows him. Hashem's happy with him. The people are happy with him. This sounds like the behavior of Aaron HaKohen. Oev shalom, rodev shalom, oev esabrios, and makar ban laTorah, getting along with people, bringing people together with God, bringing God together with the people. That's the job of the Kohen. The Na'ar Shmuel is doing it, and the Kohanim are not. Once again, you see the cynicism of the Navi, the sarcasm of the Navi, right? It is the kid Shmuel who's doing the job. The old man Eli, the Zakein Eli, is failing. His sons, the Anashim, are failing, right? And it's being left to Shmuel to pick up the pieces. So we'll continue exploring this next week, you know, really finish fleshing out how much of a disaster the world of the Mishkan is, right? But from what we've seen so far, it's safe to say that besides having lost Bris Moshe and Bris Avos back at the end of Sefer Shoftim, the Bris Kahuna is not doing very well either. The sons of Eli are looking at the institution of Kahuna, which is supposed to be all about responsibility, and they're looking at it purely as an instrument of privilege. And the birthright they had, the fact that it was given to Aaron and his descendants in perpetuity, they are taking complete advantage of to just pursue their own pleasure. So when we begin next week's shiur, we'll have to explain or try to understand what is going on with that line that they were not only stealing karbanos, but they were also engaged in sexual misbehavior. like what was going on there. See, and we'll look at the Navi's conclusion of the description of their sins. And then once we've got that down pat, we can then turn back and begin to look at how Chana and then Shmuel are going to try to somehow, some way, turn things around. Okay.
Thank you.
If you have any questions?
Thank you.
Otherwise.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's great.
Thank you.
Good perspective. Thank you.
Thank you very much.